Welcome to the FT Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 15th of November, and I'm recording at 9:30 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But I'm also going to do something that we haven't done, or I haven't done previously. And that is, I'm going to also talk you through my short PowerPoint presentation that I used at the Caledonian Club seminar yesterday on November 14th. Now, just to avoid any confusion, you'll be able to find that once I've posted Friday's written copy near the towards the end of that copy. You'll see a headline directing you to that PowerPoint, which you can click open. But there's a minor complication. Because I had some computer problems today, the audio will be completed and actually on the site before the written copy. So if you get there early and I haven't yet pointed the posted the copy, you will be able to hear it not all that long thereafter, and certainly over the weekend be able to see the audio, rather hear it with the audio over the weekend. Okay, but first, what's going on here in the relatively short term of the last week? And without hesitation, it is obviously Janet Yellen's week. Because she came in and calmed nerves and pointed out what I think it was hardly surprising, but clearly investors were reassured to hear it, that there was no grounds for raising interest rates anytime soon, and so QE is going to continue. And this is most certainly a QE-driven stock market, as you know. So Janet Yellen's week, it's pushed Wall Street to another new high in here today, with the Dow closing just below the 16,000 level. It's at 54,961. And the S&P is just below the 1800 level. It's at 1798. NASDAQ just below the 4000 level. And it's interesting, three big round phobia levels, which will certainly be tested next week, perhaps on Monday. Now, Wall Street is by far the most influential stock market in the world, as you certainly know. And therefore, it is a cushion to the downside here, where stock markets are currently weak in most instances. And it will also drag some of them higher, as it traditionally does. But there are not that many stock markets that are matching Wall Street's move. Among the developed country markets, the one most closely tracking this move is the Japanese market, and the Nikkei 225 here broke clearly up above the 15,000 level in here today, closed at 15,165. But among other developed markets, well, you don't see much to match the U.S. market performance. Europe's had a good fourth quarter of the year, had a good third quarter as well, but is currently still ranging and has been somewhat overbought. But Europe really got off to a late start, because it had been a big underperformer up until this year, as you are probably well aware. Now, elsewhere, China came out with a little bit more news on its plans, and that did help its market forward. But that had a decent bounce in here today. And also, we saw Mexico higher. Mexico had been under pressure for a while. Also, Brazil, which had been under pressure for at least the last month, had an upper dynamic in here today, gain of 2.34, and Mexico's upper dynamic is 1.80. So again, if Wall Street continues to push ahead, that will lift a number of other markets. But again, aside from Japan, the ones that are most closely tracking what Wall Street's actually doing are late runners, cyclical late runners, the less troubled, I should say, or the clearly stronger Middle Eastern markets. That's Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the UAE. They're doing really quite well, and some of the frontier markets are really quite steady as well. Including some of those African markets. Okay, now as far as Wall Street's concerned, I think I'm going to cover that really in the PowerPoint. So if you have opened that, and all you need to do is you'll see the title page, and then all you need to do is press on the arrow towards the right-hand side, not the far right of your keyboard. It's sort of middle right, and you'll see a downward arrow, and that will, now let me just click OK. I am in business. And the first chart that you will see is a 20-year chart of the S&P 500 index. It's on a monthly basis, and I've illustrated this, and you'll see what's interesting. From 95 to 2000, five-year bull market, and again from 2003 to 2008, another five-year bull market, and well, it's happened again, and this is a big one. From that 2009 low, we are seeing another five-year bull market. And I think that's a interesting factor. I think at minimum it suggests that we are getting a little bit frothy up here, a little bit overextended, although this is, as you know, driven by the quantitative easing. And Janet Yellen reassured everyone that that was going to continue. But we've also seen breaks, of course, above the S&P's 2000 high, and also the 2008 high, and that is a good overall sign. Valuations, of course, are moving higher as well. Now, click on to the next slide. And I'm showing there a weekly chart of the S&P over 5 years. Not cheap at these current levels, as you can see. But the key thing to monitor on the charts are those series of higher reaction lows that you can see so clearly on that 5-year chart. And there's an arrow pointing to those. Now, I think we're over. I know we're overbought, overextended, and remember these charts are not quite as up to date as the ones that you will see in the library tonight. But these charts are becoming more overextended. We are getting a bit of acceleration higher here, particularly by the Nasdaq. So we're overdue for a reaction and consolidation, but again, we've got the powerful tailwind, as I've mentioned, from QE, and we've also got the year-end seasonal factors that people are talking about. And you have, or my assessment of this would be that you've got a lot of big institutional investors that are nervously holding on here because nothing's gone wrong yet. But when you start to see some downward dynamics, don't be surprised if a number of those people move quickly to book their profits for the year and then go on holiday or have a rest or whatever. And there will be a possibility of the market coming back and breaking the rising 200-day moving average thereafter as we get a more choppy environment. Okay, push the bottom arrow. Going down to a one-year chart. Now, remember, this was updated on the 11th, and the S&P is almost at 1,800 now. So we've had a clear break up out of that range that you're seeing. And the two questions that I've asked, looking back first to exactly a year ago, what was the crowd saying exactly a year ago? Well, you probably remember that, but the consensus was certainly bearish. And a lot of people were talking about the third leg. I don't know too many third leg legged things, but they were talking about a third leg to the bear. And I think, you know, I've said all along that two severe bear markets within 10 years, that 2000 and 2008, that made it less likely, not more likely, that we would get a third bear move of anything like that same degree anytime. Well, I don't think we see it for a number of years. And what are they saying, though, up at current levels? Well, people are talking about P/E ratio expansion, and that's exactly what it is, or valuation expansion. Next slide. Okay. But where are we in the big cycle? And that's the Friday audio commentary. And what's going to happen over the next three decades? Okay, click again to bring up the 50-year chart of the S&P. Which is marked, and you will see the valuation contraction that goes back to the mid-1960s. That's when I began my career, my financial career, on Wall Street all those years ago. And why did I want to go in, aside from the fact that I was interested in stock markets at the time, but I will be very candid and say that a lot of my interest, or most of my interest, was due to the fact that, quote, Wall Street always went up, unquote, because it had been going up throughout my entire lifetime, having been born in early 1942. I didn't know it at the time, but I certainly became aware of it as an adolescent, and I knew of my mother's interest in the stock market. But the steep learning curve for me, of course, was then we went into this long valuation contraction cycle, which had two quite significant bear markets, particularly that 1992. It's really started into 1994, right out to the year end 1994. I mean, that was a devastating bear market at the time. A lot of people thought that it was all over, that stock markets would never recover. And, of course, it was one of the great buying opportunities throughout history. So where are we looking at this chart? You can't see my mouse or electronic pointer that I used in the seminar, but just looking at that period in around the 79, 1980, 81, I think you can see, I think we're up there. In other words, the S&P had broken to a new high at that point. People became quite optimistic, but then we had this pullback and lengthy consolidation. And one of the reasons for that was because there were a lot of people who'd been holding equities for a number of years very, very nervously, and then suddenly they see the market at a new all-time high, and so they take their profits. I think that's going to happen again. If we look up at the current activity, we're breaking up. We've still got a momentum move underway, but you and I know what lies ahead. We will be getting some tapering of the QE. And that will create the choppy environment that I refer to. Is it going to produce another huge bear market? I certainly don't think so. Could it produce quite sharp reactions, and might some markets see cyclical bull markets? Definitely. That's I think expect a choppy period over the medium term, a lengthy medium term, and that could be the next few years. But it's by no means a bad environment. It's more of a neutral market environment and a buy low, sell high type of environment. In other words, don't chase stocks that are soaring up above their 200-day moving averages. You want to buy when there's been a decent correction, and some of those stocks, particularly the autonomies, have pulled back to their 200-day moving averages, and the crowd is scared. It is counterintuitive, but I'm sure it makes sense to you when I explain it here right now, and you've heard me say it before. And it's buy low, sell high. Okay, next slide. So what's going to fuel the next secular bull market? Well, you've heard me talk about this before, so I'll be very quick on this. The big story is technological innovation. It's just unbelievable what's going on, and the corporations are the biggest beneficiaries of all. Just one quick example. In my written copy, I'm leading with a story on BMW. Well, BMW has built a $100 million plant to make carbon fiber, and it's built this in a little town in Wisconsin, of all places. And the name of that little town, I'm just going to see if I can, my memory has let me down on that. Well, it's got its 20,000, it's Moses Lake, don't you like that? At Washington, 20,000 people. Well, why did they build it there? And you'll be able to read the article, but the answer is that because they could get their energy for a fifth of the cost of what it is in Germany. A fifth, that's right, of what it is in Germany. And gosh, though, what about all the skilled people that you need for this high-tech plant? Well, there are very, very few. And if Bloomberg's article is correct, they're talking about a dozen people in this $100 million plant. And basically what they do is open the boxes that are coming in from Japan with the raw materials that they use to be processed in their ovens. So it's a fully automated system, and we're going to see more and more of that, and it is replacing jobs. There are loads of examples of this. Okay, lower energy costs, well, that's in real terms, well, that's certainly assured for the U.S. economy. But a very mixed picture, as you know, which is why I think we're not ready to start the secular bull market. We're getting the initial evidence of the hint of the secular bull we're seeing now. But too many other countries have expensive energy costs, and they're going to have to get fracking. It's as simple as that if they want to have considerably more competitive energy costs. Globalization theme, these economies of the world now are almost entirely capitalist. They're the few fringe places, North Korea and so on. But basically it's a capitalistic environment. It's command capitalism in China and other dictatorships, and it's free market capitalism in the rest of the world, and that's still the best system here for generating any economic growth. Then the corporate autonomies, well, you know all about that, so I don't need to go any further there, but I will mention this factor that Owen has talked about on almost a daily basis, and quite right too, of a rapidly increasing global middle class. And so the autonomies that sell to those middle classes all over the world are actually leading the pack. Okay, next slide. And what could prevent or significantly delay the next secular bull market, however unlikely that might be? And I sort of call this Paranoid's Corner. And you'll notice that these aren't really economic factors that I've listed here, and a bit of a smile as I wrote these down. But these are things that people worry about. Severe climate change. Well, I'm hopeful that we won't have too much of a problem with that, but no one really knows, do they? Nuclear war between superpowers. I've been worried about that for my entire adult life, but I think it's a risk that is declining, although we could certainly see nuclear war conflict between some of the smaller countries. So it is a risk. Doomsday asteroid collides with Earth. Well, that's, we could hear about that next week. Hopefully not. But it's one of those really very, very remote black swan items. Global plague of catastrophic proportions. Well, you remember all the SARS scares, and we've had numerous worries. But I think it's highly unlikely. If I take one of these as a real concern in here, is that are we going to see a revival of socialism due to the unemployment created by the accelerating technological innovation? Because these factories these automated factories are certainly replacing a lot of workers. And if a company has a choice between a smart machine or a series of smart machines and some reasonably qualified or very well qualified human workers, which are they going to choose? Well, it's really a dumb question, because unless those managers are lonely and need the company, they're going to go for the machines, which can run for 24 hours a day, and if necessary, and which do not get sick and do not go on strike. And these can cover both blue and white collar jobs, of course. And they aren't going to have to pay for Obamacare or anything else that people are worrying about. Next slide. Japan. Now, I've been saying that really since late last year that this was the most interesting developed market situation in many, many respects. I think it can also outperform Wall Street. I think the case for Japan's next secular bull market, you don't have to look much beyond the huge decline that we've seen since 1990. And just the key factor is, do we get the changes in government, changes in governance that can support a secular bull trend? Well, I think the signs are favorable. And let's look at the next slide, because all we've seen is the base and a very decisive breakout from the base. And I've said before that this current pattern that we're in is the first consolidation above the base formation. It is a medium-term consolidation, having started in, is at the end of May, I believe, when you have that huge key day reversal to the downside. Now, you heard me say earlier in this audio, and I'll repeat it, that the Nikkei closed today at 15,165, so it has broken up above that 15,000 level. And therefore, we don't have to worry about a break of that rather gradual uptrend beneath, because we've seen a decisive breakout to the upside, and give it the benefit of the doubt here. Now, I think we'd need to we'd need to get a fairly sharp pullback here to indicate an upside failure, and you'd see evidence of it before the 14,000 level, but obviously the 14,000 level, you break that progression of higher reaction lows, and then we would have to reassess. But so far, I like it. It's doing very well. Next slide. China. Okay, that's the A-share index, that's Shanghai index. And it's cheap. It's cheap for a high growth, but supply has been a problem because of all the state-controlled industries, as you can see. So I'm pushing on to the next one now, which is that Shenzhen B shares index, shown on a 10-year basis here. And that is, as you can see, up near historic resistance, but it's a steady performer here overall. I don't think it's going to break up, or I'd be surprised if it broke up out of this range in the short term, but I expect it to do so in the lengthy medium term, and possibly not in the too lengthy medium term. But I don't want to be too optimistic here at a time when Wall Street is getting really quite overextended, because my big medium-term forecast, as you know, is that we're going to see a choppy market environment overall. But China remains, in my opinion, an interesting market. And look at this. We're up near those highs, and you've got a PER of below 11 and a yield of 2%. That's a good value relative to what we see on Wall Street, certainly in terms of the price-earnings ratio. Now, what I forgot to mention when we were looking at Japan is that you look at yields in Japan and PE ratio, and they're similar to Wall Street, but people have pointed out, and I'm taking their word for this, because I haven't calculated it across the whole market, but now people are saying it, that Japan's selling at about at a book value that it's about half of what it is on Wall Street, and that's the bull fundamental story on one of the bull fundamental stories on Japan. UK market, which I have in here, decent yield here overall, but up next to a resistance level that probably will take some time to clear decisively. I say decisively because you notice that it cleared it much earlier this year, and then fell back extremely sharply. So, you know, we're a bit frothy up here in most of these markets, but again, I'm not looking for any disastrous downside for global stock markets. And you've seen my favorite quote on the next slide about the, we have Stone Age emotions, we have medieval institutions, and we have God-like technology. And oh my goodness, that is so important, and that's the big driver of bull markets here in the future. It makes our lives infinitely more interesting, and indeed this is by far the most interesting time, and I'm so glad to be around. And next slide, this Merrill Lynch 10-year Treasury Futures Total Return Index, and you're seeing that here over I've got a date wrong on that. That's through 2013. I'll correct that before I put it up. But looking at that chart, does it look different? Any different to you? And it looks different to me. We're getting a rollover in the MA. We had the failed break to the upside. And My guess is that this is a top area. And if that's right, it is a very, very important top area. If I'm right, it is the top of the secular bull market in terms of total return in the U.S. long-dated government bond market. Okay, next slide. Gold. Well, is it support building of that 1180 low? I don't know, is the honest answer. I think it could be. I think the chances of that being the case are at least 50-50, but I don't know, and therefore I'd be a little bit careful here in the certainly in the short term. If it is building support in here, we will see more evidence of it in the form of higher lows, sideways to higher lows, and then starting to get some higher highs. So I'm just going to continue to watch this. I think that was my last slide, and indeed it was. And therefore, I will say all the very best to all of you. It was such a treat to meet a number of subscribers again, old friends and some new friends at the Caledonian Club Club Seminar. And I wish you all a terrific weekend. All the best.